Hello and welcome to the podcast, The Lotus Eaters, for the 2nd of May, 2022. I'm joined by Thomas.
Hello.
And today we're going to be talking about the Mother Supremacists, Meghan's dreams are dying, and also the ruling elites just don't care about any of you or any of us or what anyone thinks whatsoever. I mean, it is amazing how insular they are. Anyway, I suppose we should begin with the Mother Supremacists.
Let's do it.
So, the mothers out there in the world are now the official enemy, which is a stunning and brave mood for some leftists to try and go with.
Mothers are the enemy of what?
Well, they're the enemy of the left, which is a weird move. And we'll see it explained by MSNBC in a minute. Although, I start off, didn't really know what to shill, but I decided to shill this. This is Lawrence Wright's The Looming Tower. The only connection here I can really make is the fact that all of Al-Qaeda were mama's boys. Like, they really loved mummy. So, I don't know, but go check it out. It's a book just going over the ideological roots of Al-Qaeda and how they led their thoughts into 9/11. So do go and enjoy.
We're all just neat, maybe.
Anyway, we shall move into why mothers are the enemy, at least according to MSNBC. Go to the next article, please. We can see here how right-wing extremists weaponize the idea of motherhood. Because... Yes, I mean, I do agree that neo-Nazi mothers bombing pop concerts would be bad.
Oh, yes.
Or bombing the underground.
Who would disagree with that?
For mother supremacy? Mass stabbings to bring attention to the knife crime against their kids? Like, I don't really know what you'd have in mind for an extremist motherhood movement. Like, what would they be doing? And, of course, the idea that this is even slightly comparable to anything we've experienced in Europe with the religion of peace. It's obviously stupid as well. If we go to the next link, I've got the archive just in case they change the headline, which they probably will. Let's be frank. It's there. They're saying here, a new report on January 6th US Capitol attack published this month, and I'm instantly thinking, oh, for God's sakes, that's going to be the extremists we're dealing with. January 6th, okay. By researchers at George Washington University detailed the role that women have played in the American far-right extremism over the past century, including how many are leaning heavily into their identities as mothers to justify their engagement and to recruit and mobilize others.
Okay.
I also love the idea that it's like, well, mums.
So what are they guilty of in the case of the Capitol riots? What, not making them enough packed lunch before they got there?
Well, they're going to argue that the mothers,
the men, that is,
justify their extremism through the fact that they are a mother and therefore are allowed to do these things.
Right.
And also it's like, well, yeah, kind of. It's like, in a slight sense here, like, you can see the reasoning because, of course, well, without the mothers, there is no future. And therefore, the mothers who have kids kind of concerned with their future.
Yeah.
I mean, the parents of the world are more valid than the genetic dead ends. I mean, that is just utterly true when it comes to politics, if nothing else. So, they didn't say the 102 women who had been arrested in connection with the attack as of mid-March represented 13% of the January 6th federal cases. Female representation boys. I don't know what that point was. It's just like, did you know they make up 13%? And yet 50% of that, no. The report found some faced felony charges and others faced misdemeanors. Around 10% of them are accused of having either engaged or conspired in violence. So the other 90% got, I don't know, trespass charges. So that's 10% of 12%. That's nothing. Their alleged behavior on January 6th is consistent with what experts have argued for years, namely that women play a more significant role in the far-right extremist movements than is often acknowledged. Extremist scenes and movements recruit and engage women for a variety of reasons. More members, perhaps? No, that's not one of them. Women are useful as a way of softening or rebranding the face of a violent or supremacist movements in ways that can recruit both men and other women, they write.
Is this MSNBC saying women are soft?
Yes, but also that the far right uses women as a front for their extremism, such as January 6th.
Yeah, it just sounds to me like MSNBC are making gender or sex-based assumptions.
Yeah, but also the idea that, yes, women are used for branding, for ideological movements. O'Reilly, like, yes, of course. If we go to the next one, we could have women being used to soften, well, racial Marxism here, or racial nationalism, in the term of BLM. We can have it there. If we go to the next one, we have softening whatever the hell Biden does. I love this. For people who haven't seen it, when Kamala Harris was first announced as the VP, the BBC ran a little video explaining who the hell she was, because Brit bongs don't care. And this is the image they went with. They're just like, female, tick. Black, tick. Asian American, tick.
And that's all that's important, is it?
That was what the BBC said was important.
Yeah.
That was if you didn't know who she was. Well,
forget,
guess what?
Forget about her policies, just that.
She's a softening face. Then we go to the next one. We also have a softening... I'm not sure I'm allowed to say that one. So we'll move on. We'll go back to the article. They say in here, they have also been used strategically to try to depict government responses to actions, protests, or violence as overreaching. Right. Yes, when the police beat up a bunch of mums, we're kind of upset about it as a society, more than when they beat up a bunch of burly lads.
Yes.
Because they're not a threat. They're not a physical threat.
Yes.
Like, in the same way, they are just not physically able to cause the kind of damage that a bunch of burly lads would. And that's the difference there. Although, of course, if we go to the next one as well, we also have just everyone uses this aspect because it's an aspect of reality, not an aspect of the far right. So we have the Sarah Everard vigil, Met Police breach rights of vigil organizers. Remember this story?
Yes.
Our country was gripped by the idea, how dare they? How dare the police arrest women for breaking lockdown rules? Not a fan of the lockdown rules. Not happy about them. But guess what? It was the law, and then the women got arrested for holding a vigil because it was illegal. But that was horrible and unbelievable because they were women. Mm. That was the argument. Yes, this is an aspect of reality that society values women more than men, especially in politics.
Yeah.
See it there. If we go to the next one, we compare it to the anti-lockdown protests, and I just love that image there. Just all the police with the batons, all the lads.
It almost looks like a double standard, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it's not a double standard without a reason, of course.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's a double standard with a biological reason, which is that women just aren't a physical threat in the same way men are. And, do you even move forward with that reality, or do you lie to yourself and say that they're both the same? Well, the media haven't caught up with the reality yet.
Mm.
So, if we go to the next one, we can see back to the article here. They say, the Southern Poverty Law Center reported that during a standoff with the federal government in 2014, one anti-government group used women as human shields, noting that significant media attention would follow if federal agents started shooting at women. Yes. Again, a basic understanding of the privilege women have in our society, which is that it's a bad look to shoot a bunch of women, whereas to shoot a bunch of men in the same circumstances is not as cared for.
Mm.
Why is that? Well, because we're not valued the same, because, well, biologically we're not the same, and therefore the social aspects are different. But instead, they act all shocked that for some reason everyone, well, they say the far right, but everyone has recognized this reality, which is that, well, things are different, not a liberal thing, I suppose, in their mind. Forget the next paragraph to say, but overall, women have historically engaged in extremist movements through their domestic roles and identities as wives, daughters, and mothers. Again, as if this is an aspect of the far right only.
Fascist trad-wifeism, if you like.
They use their roles to support backstage activities like sewing KKK hoods, cooking meals for gatherings, and homeschooling children. Oh, no. That's the homeschooling children was in there with being a member of the clan.
Yeah.
Basically the same thing. But also to mobilize men as protectors of their purity and vulnerability in the face of a range of purported threats.
Yes.
Again, yes, dum-dum. Like, this is not an aspect of the far right. This is an aspect of the human condition.
It's an ahistorical fact about gender relations, one could argue.
But pick an ideological movement. And at any point in their history, you will find them using women as poster women. Or saying we must protect the women, or any such thing, because, again, it is an aspect of the human condition.
Yeah, even the Soviet Union came round to it eventually.
It's not an aspect of the far right.
Mm.
I also just love the idea that, again, we see that women have a privilege, and a privilege here being able to mobilize men in their defense, because, well, they're not physically a threat in the same way that the men are, and also the men can deal with that. Motherhood plays an especially key role in the kinds of rhetorical strategies far right extremists use.
Right.
And so no one else.
Right, so women can do strategies. That's what the point is it?
Well, they say that the far right uses motherhood as a strategy. They present their women as mothers and therefore more worthwhile. And it's only the far right that do that these days, according to MSNBC.
Mm.
And therefore motherhood is bad. But that's a big self-report. Just only the far right care about motherhood. No other movement cares about motherhood, not at least ours, because we're not interested. Strange.
Mm.
Strange that. Including the kinds of utopian propaganda that calls on followers to reject modernity and embrace traditional values and roles. Because, you know, no one on the left has ever been utopian, that's for sure. But women aren't called upon to be entirely passive as mothers or to be relegated completely to domestic tasks. I can't get over how they describe being a mother and domestic tasks as purely passive.
Mm.
It's just a passive activity.
Yeah.
That's not facilitating the reality, though. No, that's just sitting around. Rather, motherhood is used to justify women's engagement in activism and to depoliticize their actions by positioning them as acting on behalf of their children and families. Yes. They're more valuable because they have children.
Yeah.
That literally is the future. Kiddos are our future. all there.
Yeah, and their intrinsic interaction that they have with their children at a very, very early age, which provides those children with the most important skills that they grow up with. So there's also that. Mother Ease, it's called, the concept.
Also the future of the ideological movement.
Yes.
Regardless of the movement that it is. I don't know why, again, they're just like, this is definitely a thing of the far right and not of the left at all, because, I don't know, I guess mums don't belong on the left, or they exist on the left, or shouldn't be.
Or shouldn't be on the left.
Yeah. I also love the idea that feminist mothers would never do any such thing and say, well, I'm a mother, so I should be able to do this, or leftist mother. No. It's just not often. That's the thing. It's not often enough for MSNBC to recognize it. Self-report. Mum lifestyle influencers who have embraced the QAnon conspiracy have integrated posts about child trafficking into their regular content feeds, with home decorating, cooking, and child rearing tips. A challenge for parenting website editors who have reported an uptick in conspiracy theory posts on their platforms, which honestly just sounds wholesome AF. But I love it. Because there is this bit of a weird difference between, let's say, male and female online people. That the male online people will endlessly post about the things, because men are more interested in the things.
Yes.
And the women post more things about their lives, because women are interested in people. And it's a natural aspect. But I also just love the idea of being like, here's how you cook this, you know, here's how you rearrange your furniture to look better so you got more space. Also, the global elite pedophile ring needs to be shut down. like. What do you want? So, QAnon mums, for example, MSNBC, right? Have helped fuel women's engagement in conspiracy-fueled violence, including allegations of kidnapping or plots to kidnap children they believe were rescuing from pedophilia rings or Satan-worshipping groups. Using hashtags #SaveTheChildren, QAnon conspiracy theorists have mobilized parents with claims about a global elite pedophile ring engaged in child trafficking, torture, rape, and murder. And thanks to YouTube's editorial guidelines, we can't say anything about any of that.
What a shame.
Yeah, interesting, because we live in a free country, all except that, I suppose, crime bad, about as much as you can say on that. Thanks, YouTube. The rise of conspiracies that manipulate mothers' fears, manipulates them, about their children and mobilize them to violent action or political engagement is a troubling trend. But mobilizing motherhood is not new. After the September 11 attacks, one of the most popular pieces of amateur propaganda, as Wire described it in 2001, depicted Mama Liberty, a gun-toting Statue of Liberty holding a child swathed in an American flag. And during her 2008 vice presidential run, Sarah Palin coined the term Mama Grizzlies to refer to conservative women who will protect their children from bad government policies.
Good.
Again, it's just like, okay, fantastic. Like, this reflects reality. I know it doesn't reflect your gender theory, which is that men and women are just the same, and therefore we shouldn't make any distinctions between them.
But while QAnon may not be, of course, the most reliable source of information, I wouldn't obviously doubt that for a second. It's not exactly a conspiracy theory that there are people within
Jeffrey Epstein exists.
Jeffrey Epstein exists, and there are, shall we say, those particularly keen on telling children certain things within the confines of a certain paradigm for whatever motive, like God, to think. So is it not true that that could drive these women to QAnon, given that it almost makes the conspiracy theory look half true?
I mean, look, when a bunch of leftists are like, hey, by the way, we really want to talk to your kids alone, and we're your parent now, not them.
Yeah.
And we've got them on camera saying this. And then we've got the global elite, such as Jeffrey Epstein, engaging in pedophilia.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see the reasoning of why people end up there, but we have to disavow the whole thing because of YouTube's editorial guidelines, if nothing else. But also this idea here that's just, how horrible is it that propaganda is used by the right here, the evil right, to display mothers as something to be defended and something fierce. I mean, if we go to the images they're talking about here, this is Mama Liberty here, who's defending her child, is armed. Most dangerous place in the world is between a mother and her children. Again, like, yes, women are different and valuable. If we go to the next one, you can see the grizzlies here, the Mama Grizzlies, who are going to be defending the place. I love it as well, because it just, again, what is the message of the right are giving off there? My mothers might not defend the neighborhood, but they make the neighborhood worth defending. As well, it's like, well, this is you know, the last resort here, who are the most dangerous when most pinned. Again, as if you're trying to make the right look bad, being like, hey, we're the home of mothers, and if the mums want to be safe, and we're going to take care of them and actually give them a place in which to live, and therefore I don't know, the left opposes that. They're not interested in giving a place for mums instead. Interesting. We go to the next one, we go back to the article. One of the on the extremist fringe, women still represent significant minority of violent and non-violent engagement. And to be clear, women are also the victims of tremendous misogyny, harassment, and or worse, at the hands of men within these movements. Which, the word male feminist come to mind? Mm. Did you know women can be abused in these highly ideological spaces? Yes. That's why the word male feminist just means rapist.
Quite.
Kathleen Blee's research on women in white supremacist movements has described racist skinhead men who refer to women in their group as oi toys and who are proud to be dominated, proud to dominate their wives or girlfriends. I don't know what that statement is meant to be.
No.
Like, this is a big dunk on the right for engaging in, well, women who are being dominated by their men, as if no women enjoy being dominated as well, but whatever.
And as if women don't want men to be, well, competent partners.
Yeah, don't know what oi toys means, but also just, yeah, did you know that women are abused in extremist circles? Yes, again, male feminist comes to mind. But it is important to recognize the ways that motherhood is used to recruit and defend women's engagement in violence and anti-democratic movements, including to try to mitigate culpability in criminal or violent activities. The GWU report analysis of motherhood showed that the January 6th mothers, in their legal defences, decided to try and make women look more sympathetic by emphasising their caretaking roles and status as good mothers and grandmothers who are devoted to their husbands and families. Yeah, and yes, thank you MSNBC for admitting that the courts are openly biased, and this is a fantastic legal strategy if you are a woman in a circumstance, which is to be like, did you know I'm a mum? Someone saying, did you know I'm a dad? Eh, might get some comeuppance, but no, not as much as if you say, well, I'm a mother. Of course, yes, the courts are biased. It's easy to understand why calling on women to protect their children from unimaginable harm is effective. Yes. Which is why everyone hates you. It's why Libs of TikTok does so well. Because if Libs of TikTok goes to all the mums in the land, it's like, hey, look at this. This is where you send your kids. Also, you pay for this. You remortgage your home to send your kids to university. That's what they're learning. Yeah, funnily enough, the mums aren't too happy about that.
No, and for good reason.
But that's also what makes it so dangerous, because motherhood itself is being used to manipulate women and to recruit, mobilize, and justify violent and anti-democratic actions. Again, this is all the doing of the far right and nobody else. Nobody else engages in recruitment along some kind of lines.
Anything that gets in the way of the state, I don't know, taking a woman's child away before actually having the chance to develop a bond seems to be being presented as fascism here.
Yeah, but I also just can't get over how someone has discovered here the realities of, let's say, political activism. You know, the fact that you put the women in the front, and you always want them shown, or if they're in the front, then the police won't harm them, especially. And it's like, well, this is just a feature of the far right. No one else. We would never do any such things. So, I mean, the people who have been, well, dividing society along race, sex, and sexual orientation, etc. lines, and trying to manipulate all of society into treating them as aristocrats because of those aspects, alongside women, is completely confused as to why the far right is doing such things. And it's like, well, because they're different. But again, it's only the far right that would do such things. I also just thought I'd enjoy that because I can't stand MSNBC and their bias is always evident. But otherwise, mother supremacy, which, to be honest, I kind of wanted to see in a funny way. Like, you know, did you watch, what is it, the Meninist movement? Where it's like all the men get together.
I didn't.
But I love the idea, like, okay, feminism is kind of dead and a rotting corpse, discussing about whether or not to chop children off. Okay, well, that's dead. In which case, I'd like to see some kind of right-wing version, if nothing else. It was just like Chad mothers who were like, yes, protecting the home. Get rid of the nonces out of the school if you can. But otherwise, that's that. Let's move on to the Meghan Markle.
Yes, so Meghan Markle's dreams are dying. Her dreams to establish herself as, I don't know, the combination of an aristocrat, Hollywood A-lister, and princess of woke activism, if you like, all at the same time, are starting to crumble in front of her very eyes because her animated show, Pearl, has been axed by Netflix.
No.
Yes. So to put this into context, let's begin with what is going on at Netflix. So the news broke a month or so ago that Netflix has lost 200,000 subscribers in the first quarter of this year. This is a net loss. Excuse the pun. In January, it reported it had 221.84 million subscribers at the end of 2021. However, during the three-month period that ended on March the 31st, Netflix says its total fell to 221.64 million subscribers. It marks the first time Netflix has lost subscribers during a quarter in 10 years. It said that it's not counting for the losses in Russia, where the streamer cut services over the country's invasion of Ukraine. It would have added 500,000 subscribers in that quarter. So Netflix have given four main reasons for why this has occurred. So first, this is what they say, a rise in broadband prices, data costs, and a potentially reduced uptake of connected TVs, none of which they control, that's one reason. The second reason is that people are continuing to discover through time that they don't actually need a subscription to watch Netflix. They can just like log in on, I don't know, a mate's account and watch it, for as long as they don't go over the number of applications that they can kind of link it up to or whatever. So there's that. The third reason is because of competition from YouTube, Amazon, Hulu, which I've never even heard of before today, which has been more intense over the last 3 years. And the last reason, they say, as already alluded to, are factors such as sluggish economic growth, increasing inflation, geopolitical events such as Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and some continued disruption from COVID, which is continuing to have an impact as well, mostly because I think a lot of people bought a Netflix subscription when they had like literally nothing to do. And you just have to look at how well like Tiger King did compared to like previous Netflix shows at a different point in time to see kind of how this was very much went in their favor.
It's weird how they don't notice at all Nonceflix as well, that whole scandal, the whole cuties thing.
Yeah, they haven't mentioned this once, have they? Yeah, but I've been led to believe that they're announcing these losses because they're getting sued by like a South Korean broadband firm linked with the show, what was it, Squid Game, and that they're kind of trying to present the their losses now in a way that will give them a more sympathetic court hearing or whatever. But yeah, I don't know much about that, but these reasons that they've given, I mean, all four of them may be true to a point, but as you say, there is another reason why people may be revoking their subscription. Because it's getting progressively worse. I think there is this sense that Netflix are becoming a little bit of an intersectional propaganda machine.
A little bit.
A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, cuties. The writing's on the wall with that, really. The third series of Sex Education, I'm embarrassed to say that I've watched it, but was absolutely awful for that. There are other examples, aren't there? Just God, look, an endless list. We'll get the list up of the stuff that's been cancelled in a minute. But I think people are getting increasingly aware of this, and for that reason, they've had to think, well, how are we going to survive in the foreseeable future? So they're thinking about making cutbacks. So yes, they're announcing they're expecting further losses in the second quarter, as much as 2 million subscribers they believe could go. So it seems Netflix is decadent. Yeah, the co-CEO and chief content officer Ted Sarandos has said that the company still wants to compete, and for that reason is going to continue investing in new shows. This will involve improving the core servers and increasing the content spread relative to previous years. Netflix was worth, I think, $246.46 billion in 2021, but still carries a £15.5 billion debt. But yeah, it's making cutbacks. And Meghan Markle's show Pearl, which is supposed to focus on the adventures of a 12-year-old girl inspired by historically influential female characters, is one of the fatalities. But let's have a look at the list of the shows that have been axed. So here we are. Most of these I've literally never heard of. So you've got Another Life, Archive 81, Bone, Boons and Curses, Cooking with Paris, Dino Daycare, that sounds like a children's show, Gentified, On the Verge, Pearl, that's Meghan Markle's, Pretty Smart, Raising Dion, Space Force, The Babysitter's Club, The Twits, Toil and Trouble. So these are the cancelled series and scrapped projects in 2022. That's quite a lot. Have you heard of any of those at all other than Pearl?
I hadn't even heard of Pearl.
No. Well, okay.
But I'm kind of removed from a lot of this stuff.
Yes.
I never had a Netflix account, actually, so not for me.
Yeah, neither have I, but I do have access to one, regrettably. I will be cancelling very, very soon, obviously. But Pearl is basically the show that was produced by the production company called Archwell, the production company founded by both Harry and Meghan to, I suppose, springboard their career into the limelight as both kind of aristocrats and Hollywood A-listers, with, of course, a very, very woke political message. So this is their declaration, if you like. Archwell Productions was created by the Duke and Duchess of Sussex to produce programming that informs, elevates, and inspires. Through its creative partnership with Netflix, the world's leading streaming entertainment service with more than 195 million members, Archwell Productions will utilise the power of storytelling to embrace our shared humanity and duties to truth through a compassionate lens. So yeah, there is, I suppose, a commitment to the idea of a ministry of truth before it actually happened. But yes, if we move on to the next, we can see the declaration made here, when there was, of course, all the excitement for where Meghan's career was, I suppose, as a writer, producer, whatever was going to go. So yeah,
Meghan. I don't know, like, I don't know what on earth she thought her career was. It was like, I'll get into the royal family and then screw it up and then just disappear. Like,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Her entire venture has been flawed from the very, very beginning for reasons that we're going to go into. Her personal, the way that she's managed her public persona has been so out of place with the virtues that she's espoused consistently. And I think the very reason that Netflix have chosen to pull this is because they just know this is going to be a disaster before it's even released. But yeah, this is the announcement. Meghan Markle, the Duchess of Sussex, will create and executive produce Pearl, an animated series for Netflix. Hailing from Markle and Prince Harry's Archville Productions banner, Pearl is a family series that centres on the adventures of a 12-year-old girl who finds inspiration in a variety of influential women throughout history. The show comes from the Duke and Duchess's multi-year deal with the streamer, under which they will create scripted series, documentaries, features, and children's programming. Meghan herself gave the following description. Like many girls her age, our heroine, Pearl, is on a journey of self-discovery as she tries to overcome life's daily challenges, said Markle, Archville Productions co-founder. Pearl will be the first animated series from Archville Productions. Netflix revealed in April that it teamed up with Archville for Heart of Invictus, a documentary produced in partnership with the Invictus Game Foundation that, of course, Prince Harry is involved with, that highlights the resilience and hope from competitors participating in the titular event, The Hague 2020. So yeah, now that it's not going to be happening because Netflix have cancelled the animation series, whilst it's still... they've cancelled it because it's still in the development stage. So if we move on to the announcement here we are. Netflix Acts animated series created by Meghan and Harry's production company while show is still in the development stage. So this is, well, already a financial disaster, surely.
I mean, you'd imagine. I wouldn't even have thought the idea was a financial disaster. But then again, so was Cuties and they never cared. So it's not about the money, is it?
Well, the Cuties make a loss on that. Or whoever made it. Well, so do I, but...
I mean, the amount of people just, you know, deleted their accounts in response to being like, maybe I shouldn't pay money for essentially CP.
Yeah. But I mean, this may be, of course, due to cutbacks, but it may also be because they've looked at the show in development and maybe thought it just looks awful. Or Netflix might just know, in light of recent criticism, that releasing it to delete could lead to more subscriber losses, as I've already said. But one could argue that she still has her podcast on Spotify, doesn't she? I've never listened to it, but she does have a podcast on Spotify. But the fact that no one seems to have heard of it is probably an indication of how well that it's doing. But like, if she loses this gig, if you like, which by the sounds of it she has, I mean, Netflix is decadent. Probably one of the biggest outlooks, or I don't know, broadcasters, online broadcasters for. You can say the woke managerial class will assert their influence and make a career out of, in effect, just posturing those virtues. If Netflix is going to go down, then pretty much everything about what Meghan Markle's kind of set up to achieve for herself personally and politically is going to come crumbling as well. Do you not think?
I don't know. I mean, these people seem to keep failing upwards. So
yeah, but there was a time, though, when... it genuinely looked as if being woke was financially profitable. I don't think that that's the case anymore, but you look at, for example, like the Star Wars trilogy, the most recent Star Wars trilogy, excluding the very last film, that was a complete and utter disaster. The Last Jedi was absolutely, I think we can both agree that was absolutely appalling on so many levels, but commercially it actually did pretty well, didn't it?
I don't know, I don't have the data.
Well, financially it did pretty well. I mean, critically it doesn't really matter or anything, but yeah. Yeah, one can argue that this isn't a big deal for Meghan, but I think it is. But royal author Tina Brown agrees with me on this, has said as much as recently in an interview with the Washington Post. If we move on to the next article. Yeah. So, but she's basically said that Meghan ultimately has no workable brand and isn't really going to go anywhere. And that's probably been the case from the very beginning. She said it can't be said for Harry because Harry's in a much better spot because he's brilliantly started the Invictus Games, which I think he gained a pretty good public profile for doing. And that's what his brand should be. He should just forget everything but the Invictus Games and just make that his brand. It's authentic. He really was extremely a good shoulder for it. So veterans are in his bloodstream in terms of authentic caring about them. And it's a wonderfully connective course to be aligned to. Meghan, however, as she says, doesn't really have a brand. You feel that she is sort of grasping somewhat at whatever Twitter is caring about at the moment. And that, again, is a very, very good characterization of every woke person, really. It's just a matter of waiting for the next in thing and then to posture an allegiance with it. Just like, well, you could say it's been the case with people over Ukraine, the Ukraine situation. Lots of people have presented an interest in that, despite not following what's been going on in the Donbass region for the last 8 years. Then there's, of course, Elon Musk, who's been castigated by the ex-Twitter cathedral. And being against him has almost become a virtue to be postured. You can pick off the NPCs quite quickly, given how they almost present these things in a sequence. With one another, and Meghan has always been one of those, and has set out almost to basically subsidize for herself through a combination of being a member of the royal family and cash in on the capital that there is to be accumulated from woke politics as well. But I genuinely think that market forces are shifting at this point. I think people are getting so sick of it that there is genuinely no market to virtue signal like this anymore.
I don't know. I mean, I've never been a fan of the idea that this is something to actually make money. I mean, the get woke, go broke thing is years old because it is eventually true, even if it's not immediately true. But the George Floyd effect, I mean, you can see it just running right there. It's vaccines, it's Ukraine, it's women's rights.
Yeah, yeah.
It's my 40th birthday. That's like my mentoring scheme. So, yeah, just jump from thing to thing you know nothing about and we'll never learn anything about. And we'll just leave as soon as it's over.
Black Lives Matter as an organization has turned out to be what I suspected it would be all along, basically, just an alternative. You could say managerial class trying to reconstruct how we look at a very, very particular metric of equity, which is race. I was one of the most ardent critics of Nigel Farage, for example, when he said that they're trying to implement Marxism through the back door. I always knew that they had something almost worse in mind, or that they were just complete frauds. Even Ash Sarkar has even had to come out and admit it's now for the first time in ever, really, that they may be bad actors.
All the Marxists end up being bad actors anyway.
Well, not least because it's a philosophy of victimhood, really. And anyone, if you appeal to lived experience and use that language, you can lay claim to being on the receiving end of an awful hegemonic system that's rigged against you. That's why nothing positive can come out of it. But that was Meghan's market, in effect. She was appealing to, of course, to those interested in Black Lives Matter, those interested in feminist politics, and basically just making loose enough commitments, loose enough statements to be able to kind of set herself up or her career up in a way to do very well out of it. And it doesn't seem to be working. Like it was a very, very poor, poorly thought out strategy from the very beginning. Whether marrying Harry from the start was a part of that is, of course, a matter of pure speculation. I genuinely hope that it isn't, but there you go. She's woke, that's for sure, and like all wokists, she's extremely narcissistic and confused about her political ideals, not least because she probably doesn't believe in them. You're not going to build up a credible portfolio of political activism if your virtues are all about just supporting the current thing. Nothing is really going to go anywhere for Meghan, basically, is what she told the Washington Post. Miss Brown, anyway. And it never will, because there's no substance to anything that she's actually doing. This can be seen in the persona that she exhibits in public life, which we will see in a bit. If we just skip past this, because this is, well, the absolutely awful interview that she gave with Oprah Winfrey, where she was called out to have been completely and utterly untruthful about several facts about her testimony. I mean, there was like that. I can't remember exactly, but there was the matter of the comments made about about her unborn child or something like that, about its race, and she actually contradicted herself on multiple levels about multiple ways about that. She was meant to have an interview with Piers Morgan, and when she found out that he actually had a few reservations or identified contradictions in the testimony that she gave, she completely and utterly backed out of it. And of course, he's had a bee in his bonnet about this ever since. But that's basically what you're contending with. This was one of the biggest PR disasters she could actually have subjected herself to. Because had she actually gone on and let Piers Morgan attack her, she could actually have made herself look more credible. The fact that she wouldn't even have the interview with him in the end, it just almost admitted that she was guilty in the public eye. So if you're going to present yourself as, like, I don't know, a new type of royal, then surely engaging with interlocutors who you know are going out to destroy you would be a good way of perhaps doing that. But anyway, if we move on to some of the... Actually, no, we've got a shill, actually, for our next thing. And this is, I believe, what you did. If you're interested in actually understanding what real royalty is, then please check out Callum's video on how does the crown work. Do you have any comments to say about this?
Oh, basically, it's just explaining partially why everyone in the UK absolutely despises her. Like, I know this is somewhat of a division in the United States, although most people hate her anyway. But over here, her name is literal mud. And it's because, well, she decided to go against everything the institution stands for. And it's like, well, okay, we're not a democracy. We're not a republic. Like, we're a United Kingdom. And if you decide to go against the institution of the kingdom, well, then get lost. Mm. Simple as.
Yeah. But no, it's really, really interesting stuff. So please do check that out if you're interested in learning about more about the royal family, of course. But yeah, let's go back to the terrible public persona that that Meghan has been sustaining. So this is a very, very recent picture that was put out by her husband, Prince Harry, who said he was thrilled to be riding alongside this is, I think, one of Prince Harry's friends. Thrilled to be riding alongside my friend Prince Harry and the rest of the Los Padres team at the Santa Barbara Polo Club. I believe this is in California. We've ridden together many times over the years now, and we've both been parents. It's extra special to be able to spend this time together. Now, you could argue that there isn't really anything shocking about this, given that, well, we know that Harry likes to play polo. And we know that he's probably going to, I don't know, take this up as a hobby wherever he lives. But it would be a bit of a PR no-go if I don't know, his wife was seen to be, or at least from her perspective, immersed in the culture that she's already alluded to being the one that's kind of constraining her in some way. So if we get the next, we can get the next up here. We can see that Meghan was actually in attendance here. So whilst she's, of course, presenting herself on the one hand to the opera interview, as like an outsider of this culture, almost in the way that you could say, like a complete like stranger would be. She's doing the complete kind of opposite here, whilst not really seeing how this could come back to not look particularly, I don't know, honest. Yeah. So if we move on to the next, we can see the $14 million mansion that they're currently living at the moment, which, by the way, I believe is 5% paid for by, well, our tax money, given that they are still receiving some privileges from being members of the royals.
Fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. Dearie me, yeah, that's not particularly good, is it? Anyway, if we move on to the next, we can see that this isn't the one. If we move on to, no, not this one. Go to the one after. And the one after this, which I think features the dress. Okay, no, maybe it doesn't include it. But in short, as you can see, the everyone's pretty much every single royal that has been kind of following Harry and, well, Meghan from the very, very beginning has been out to get her, or at least so it seems. You could collapse this into a, I don't know, the sort of critical narrative that the Vara Media do, for example. Or you could see this as just how, I don't know, a patriotic press, maybe, if you want to call the Mail, that would react to someone who they believe is ultimately trying to, like, put into disrepute one of the only institutions that we still kind of value as a country.
It's worse than that. I mean, literal traitor.
Yes.
Because remember, if you're a patriot in the UK, you are a patriot for what? Mm. Well, for the kingdom. Well, who's running the damn kingdom? Well, it's the crown. And in which case, if you're a someone who harms the crown, you are a literal traitor.
Yeah.
And in which case, of course, everyone hates you.
Yeah. She's doing an absolutely appalling job, really, of managing her public profile, of trying to make friends beyond, you could say, her Californian, like, Hollywood cohort or whatever. Like, Harry has still got his thing with the Invictus Games going for him, I suppose. But ultimately, it genuinely looks like this. The fact that I get the impression that she had a lot of faith in her potential, I don't know, script writing career with stuff like Pearl. And if she's not gonna, the outlets aren't going to be there for her to spread across those who would pay like stupid amounts to watch very, very poor quality content, then there's not really a market for her at all. She's neither an aristocrat. She was a Hollywood C-lister really before she got known for going out with Harry, to be honest. I mean, she was in Suits. That was her best gig up to that point, I believe. And at this point, we're probably going to see, I don't know, like peak grifting. I don't know. Let's watch this space and see where she goes from here.
Yeah, I suppose we'll move on to the ruling elites.
The ruling elites.
This is all I can forward to.
On the same subject.
Yeah, well, literally. Well, in the case of her, she doesn't rule anything anymore. Mm. The ruling elites just don't care. Just do not give a toss about anyone's opinion, frankly. Or at least that's what I've got from this White House press dinner we've been watching and some other stuff. So I thought I'd go through it. I'm sure people have seen the clips, but we're going to enjoy them. I thought I'd start this off with Thick Concepts. This is a premium video me and Carl did a long time ago. I believe it's this one. I might have got this wrong, in which we talk about scientific language. So there was this movement, apparently, in the 1900s where people decided, oh, yeah, we'll make a scientific language. So we'll get rid of things like the word mother and so forth. And it fell on its arse, of course, as being useless and not possible, at least in English or any other human language. I suppose bug language would be another aspect. But it didn't work, and we'll come back to that in a minute, because we're going to start off with a clip from Lukashenko. In case you don't know who that is the dictator, the ruler of Belarus. And, well, he even kind of says it himself, Putin puppet, which is a weird situation.
He might as well have missed it at this point.
Yeah, this is a news aggregate from Svetov, and this is a quote from Lukashenko here talking to his supporters. He says, "Thank God we have a dictatorship. You all criticized me. Dictatorship, dictatorship. But there is order under this dictatorship." And everyone laughs, which is just really weird, because remember, he's still trying to claim that he's not a dictator and is elected. And that election in Belarus was perfect. It wasn't that, everyone found loads of ballots being burnt, for example. No, he definitely is not a dictator, even though he says he's a dictator. An individual who just does not care.
Mm.
I mean, obviously, that's the obvious point here, which is that dictators, well, in democracies, we have our own problems. But dictators, I mean, they're terrible. And of course, he doesn't care about freedom. But the one nice thing you can say about them is at least they just are frank, because there are no repercussions for just saying the thing. Which is, I am a dictator. And if we move forward, we can go to the White House press dinner. And it is just weird. I mean, it's just, this whole event is weird, frankly. I don't know if to all Americans is as weird as it is to us. But the White House and all their weird
he's the
cronies,
state of his tie.
Yeah, they all meet up, or at least they used to, under Obama, so they can all have this incestuous relationship in public on camera, so we can see how in bed they are. It's almost like they're just mocking us, that, yeah, we basically work together to run the country. To hell with you. Or at least the Dems did. Because under President Trump, this all got pulled. This didn't happen. Because he was just like, why would I go to that? Why would I hang out with the media? Media are the enemy of the people.
Yeah.
Pretty simple. And of course, Biden has brought it back. And there are some weird clips out of it. I suppose we'll enjoy the first one in which Joe Biden says, "Let's go, Brandon." Like.
"But I'm not worried about the midterms. I'm not worried about them. We may end up with more partisan gridlock, but I'm confident we can work it out during my remaining 6 years in the presidency." "And folks, I'm not really here to roast the GOP. That's not my style. Besides, there's nothing I can say about the GOP that Kevin McCarthy hasn't already put on tape. And, you know, at the same time, a lot of people say the Republican Party is too extreme, too divisive, too controlled by one person. They say that's not your father's Republican Party. Ronald Reagan said, 'Mr. Gorbachev, tear this wall down.' Today's Republicans say, 'Tear down Mickey Mouse's house.' And pretty soon they'll be storming Cinderella's castle, you can be sure of it. But Republicans seem to support one fella, some guy named Brandon.
He's having a really good year, and I'm kind of happy for him. Let me conclude with a serious word.
I mean, that's just weird.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll start off with the Mickey Mouse thing. I mean, yes, if Mickey Mouse's house has free candy over it, I'm going to be sus of Mickey Mouse. So getting rid of Disney is the right thing to do. But also, he's just standing there saying, yeah, I know all the country's saying F Joe Biden by saying, let's go Brandon, constantly. Mm. And I don't care. It doesn't care whatsoever. Again, you all call me dictator, but who cares? Who cares what you think? Literally, your opinion is
worthless. Shameless.
Absolutely worthless. And if that wasn't proving it enough that he does not give a toss what anyone actually believes, well, then we have the next one, which is we have John Stewart's diversity disappointment going on stage. Again, all very incestuous, the left. And he gives a joke here, which is Joe Biden's expense. And Joe Biden just laughs and just thinks it's hilarious. Let's play.
You know, I think ever since you've come into office, things are really looking up. You know, gas is up, rent is up, food is up, everything. No, it really has been a tough first year for you, Mr. President.
That's just weird. Okay, it's a good joke. I'll give him that, you know.
It is.
You know, Trevor Noah actually makes a joke for once. Jesus. But the fact that Joe Biden just smiles and laughs is just revealing, I think, which is that they just do not care.
We're just not listening.
I mean, the fact that they even have this event, the fact that they televise it at the worst times that it is, but then to even talk about the fact that, yeah, we've all made the country worse, and just to not have any reaction other than just, who cares? Because these people's opinion really does not matter. No one's opinion matters to them, because they run the country how they please. If we go forward, we can see more of this. I mean, I love Ian Miles Chung making the point that just laughing at you at this point. I mean, what else are they doing? I'd love to see how the elections are going to go. I suppose we'll know then. And if we go forward, I also wanted to note the fact that they also don't care what you think in regards to Florida man, Ron DeSantis. And this is a Vox hit piece on him.
I suppose predictable.
It was meant to be a hit piece. They tried. In which they're trying to say that now Ron DeSantis is the authoritarian in the room. Because don't you know, he was following the same trail as Viktor Orban, the authoritarian. Interesting strategy.
Hmm. What's the connection?
But I also just love, did you know he's like Viktor Orban? Oh, that's terrible. Anyway, they say in here, in June of last year, Hungary's far-right government, far-right, they're not in Hungary.
They're really not.
They're just conservatives in their region. Hungary's government passed a law cracking down on LGBTQ rights, including a provision prohibiting instruction on LGBTQ topics in sex education classes. About 9 months later, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis signed the so-called Don't Say Gay Bill, banning classroom instruction by school personnel or third parties on sexual orientation or gender identity up to the third grade. According to some knowledgeable observers on the right, the two bills were closely connected. I love it. The international right agrees that they don't want freaks who have gone to university talking to their kids about queer sex.
Yeah.
Good. How terrible. This is why I read so much left-wing nonsense, or at least left-wing outlets, because they write their stuff as like, yeah, isn't this horrible?
Yeah.
And they're so disconnected from everyone else at this point.
At this I don't know why they're persisting with the don't say gay phrase.
The anti-groomer bill.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, did you know that the entire right wing internationally doesn't want queer weirdos talking to their kids about their queer sex?
As with nearly all mothers.
Oh no, how terrible of the right to do it. So, strange that. Viktor Orban described his country's anti-LGBTQ law as an effort to prevent gay people from preying on children. Pushaw, the press secretary for Ron DeSantis, described Florida's law as an anti-grooming bill on Twitter, adding that if you're against an anti-grooming bill, you're probably a groomer. And I love that. As you can see there, they say, like, oh my God, isn't this him being homophobic here? And I don't know what levels of homophobia there are in Hungary. Probably some amounts. It is Eastern Europe. But the fact there that he mentions it's an anti-LGBTQ bill instead of just an anti-homosexual bill or something like that, like Putin's guys would say instead. I find that revealing because, again, this is the difference between alphabet people and homosexuals.
Well, this basically conflates the issue of today with the, I don't know, the being gay is okay argument 40 years ago that has been won for... ever since.
Grooming your kids is okay. Those are two different things, mate.
Yes, like, quite.
We can accept homosexuality and be tolerant, and then there is being tolerant of your kids being groomed, and big difference.
Yeah, I mean some might even go as far as arguing that assuming that gay people want to do that is a homophobic assumption in itself.
Yeah, but apparently the leftists don't know the difference between those things. Although I also just love the fact that they just don't respect themselves in that regard. Like, they're alphabet people, as we shall term them for now. Within the left, you see them at party conferences or whatever.
Might as well. They're going to use every single one.
Yeah, but you see them get up on stage at party conferences being like, I'm a demi-queer, neurodivergent, blah, 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 right? And these people, I just love how they don't even have any respect for themselves in the way they refer to themselves. And I was watching Roger Scruton talk to Douglas Murray about this, and he made an excellent point about chanting. You know, the cultural differences between the two political camps, just in this small aspect. You ever go to a left-wing versus a right-wing protest, and you're the left-wing one, there's a lot of chanting. There's a lot of the same thing. You just chant it again and again, whatever it is, trans rights or human rights, whatever, right? And he mentioned, you know, I joined a right-wing protest recently and shouted a chant. And then we just stopped. And I turned to my friend and said, well, why don't we chant like a lot like we go on like left-wing protests? And she said, I don't know, with us, you've said it once, it's probably enough. Don't need any more. But it's a cultural difference in the sense that Roger Scruton noted that, well, if you're just chanting something endlessly, I mean, that does show that you're not interested in the other person at all. You're just interested in shouting at them. You're deranged.
You're there to propagate.
Yeah, you're either a propagandist or you're deranged if you're just shouting at someone instead of actually listening.
Or trying to justify a bad idea to yourself unconsciously in the belief that if you say it enough times, it seems rational.
You will end up believing it. Mm. But if we go to the next one as well, there's also something I find really funny about. In case you don't know anything about Viktor Orban and his party, this story made me laugh back in the day. Joseph over here. Hungary's MEP quits over allegedly fleeing gay orgy. This is a hell of a headline. Yeah. Makes you want to know more of the headline. So Joseph, a top member of Viktor Orban's Fidesz party, was stopped by police after reports of a house party violating lockdown rules. That's the controversy. Prosecutors say he was found with drugs as he tried to flee the gathering, reportedly shinning down a drainpipe. And on Friday, he pleaded to a parliamentary group in parliamentary immunity because he is now under investigation for both non-compliance with measures relating to COVID-19 and also violation of drug laws. And I love how they note in here that Joseph here was one of the founders of Fidesz, Viktor Orban's party, and also remains a close confidant of Viktor Orban. I think Viktor Orban might have known that his gay orgy friend here might have been a bit
naughty.
She might have been something about him. So the idea that I'm sus of the idea that his is just deeply homophobic. Again, I see more and more signs that this is about, you know, alphabets versus something else. But let's move forward, because also you might have remembered Vox mentioned that he passed an anti-LGBT bill.
Yep.
And he passed another one recently. And how did he do that? And they never mentioned, did they? Apart from the election, Visegrad 24 right here, the Hungarian election, Hungary also held a referendum today on whether or not to ban sexually explicit media and sex ed and sex reassignment information targeting school children. How do you think that went? Voter turnout was 67%, and between 92 and 96% of the Hungarian people voted no.
That's what I would expect. As a matter of fact, I would expect it to be even higher than that in favour of no.
Yeah, questions asked. Question. Do you support teaching of sexual orientation to underage children in public education institutions without parental consent?
No.
92% no. Wonder who the 8% is, frankly.
Well, I wouldn't want to know.
We also asked, do you support the promotion of sex reassignment therapy for underage children? Again, 90-odd% went no, not doing that. And this is a real difference I can see here between the authoritarian, far-right Hungarian government. Plenty of things to criticize. You know, the endless corruption you get in these countries and so on and so forth. But the aspect here of asking the public, hey, what's your opinion on this? Like, we have an opinion on this that you maybe shouldn't go to children underage without parental consent and start talking to them about such things. But we're going to put it to a referendum and ask the people, what do they actually think? And you end up with a 90-odd% performance of, to hell with that.
Enough said.
Whereas, compare that to Joe Biden, for example, who, when was the referendum, lads? When was the referendum even statewide on teaching this stuff in
crickets.
Schools? Never happened. Wasn't a thing. Because your opinion doesn't matter in this regard. Whereas apparently, Viktor Orban's Hungary is looking more democratic and more interested in people's opinion in such regards. Also, Visegrad ends this off with a great point. What's interesting about these results is that the large percentage of people who voted against Orban's party in the election also voted for Orban's wanted outcome of the referendum. So the people who voted against Orban were also like, yeah, but also not teaching kids about queer sex at the age of 3, because that's a bit weird. He said, they say he will also have overwhelming support when he introduces laws banning this type of sex education as well. I just find that strange. I just find it strange that in the West, we have, you know, the Land of the Free, Home of the Brave, and they don't have elections on such things in classrooms, whereas in Hungary, they do. We're looking weak. If we go to the next one, we're going to see that apparently he did very well in that election, which just makes me laugh. Like, he got like 50% of the vote and then got 90% in his referendum, which is a hell of a performance. Mm. That's not even, no one's saying that's rigged either in the referendum. Just genuinely, people do not want these Americanisms in their countries.
Good.
And if we go on to the back to the article, we have them then going on to whine about the fact that Ron DeSantis, Florida man, follows the same cultural policy. And if we continue to do that, things will end up terrible. Don't you want to end up somewhere else apart from, well, a traditional society? They argue, the moral panic about alleged LGBT grooming services to justify the imposition of ideological controls on public education and the speech rights of progressives and LGBTQ teachers. Right, what they said there, LGBTQ teachers and progressives have a speech right to groom children into their world.
That's one hell of an assumption, isn't it?
But that is genuinely how the left think of themselves in the United States. I mean, Vox being a good example of the left of the Democratic Party here.
Yes.
And they genuinely believe that, yes, we have a right to groom children. That is our speech rights as free Americans. That's how they view the teaching profession.
Although they literally see see children as a potential expression of that hegemonic force that oppresses them. So that would be their ideological justification for why they believe that. Yeah, that's the cynical part of it.
But that's how they view the teaching profession as well. That is entirely just there for them to use to groom children into their worldviews.
Yes, and they take that to be a moral use of the education system.
I'm getting a lot of use out of the self-report feature, but quite frankly, I mean, just endlessly here. They also go on to, well, whine that Disney's privileges got taken away. The use of regulatory powers to punish political opponents is right out of Viktor Orban's playbook. In 2015... Hungarian name, an extremely wealthy Hungarian businessman and longtime Orban ally turned on his patron using a vulgar term to describe the prime minister. Oh, what did he do? Did he have him shot? Did he have him whacked? Did he have him under house arrest? In retaliation, the government cuts advertising with his media outlets. Oh no.
Oh, that's terrible.
I have a right to government funding, don't you know? I have a right to government money to be poured into my companies. And no, you don't. Mm. I mean, it's terrible that he also engages in that kind of corruption for his friends. But the fact that, well, they think, again, you just have a right to essentially be the government's B, just to end up having money poured into you. And that's how the economy works.
Yeah, they definitely don't have that right.
If you can't suckle on the state, you have no chance. Again, the left's position on what the economy is. Mm. Nice self-report. Higher education is another area where DeSantis, like Orban, has taken a special aim. On April 22nd, DeSantis signed the Stop Woke Act, a bill that, among other things, expressly regulates what professors are allowed to teach about race and gender in college courses.
Mm.
Yeah, because a lot of what you were teaching was illegal under the Civil Rights Act. Because you were teaching racial supremacy. Just this time, well, people of color racial supremacy, which is totally different. Orban's assault on higher ed has been even more striking. In 2018, his government issued a decree removing accreditation for Hungarian gender studies degrees. Oh, we gotta stop this man. Yeah. He's gone too far now. He's not even accrediting my gender studies degree.
He's literally worse than Hitler.
Basically Hitler 2.0, folks. A move that effectively banned Hungarian universities from teaching that subject. Oh, no. Oh, dear. It's not accredited.
My heart bleeds.
How can I live anymore? It's all over, boys. Good. Go to hell. I have no sympathy whatsoever for such BS. But again, if you don't get state support to teach gender ideology, you have been wronged. You have been deeply wronged. That is Vox's position. Again, how the economy should work.
Mm.
They just, and this all leads up. I mean, those three points there that I've mentioned, the fact that they think they're entitled to groom your kids. That's just what teaching is for. That is the whole purpose of public schools. The fact that they're entitled to then get your kids when they're older and indoctrinate them with the gender ideology. Again, that's the purpose of a university. And the economy, why is it there? So I can suckle on it. This is what they think the world should work. That's their idea of normalcy. Right? And that's so revealing because it reveals that they genuinely believe they are just entitled to win. And this is something Republicans have to keep in mind and conservatives generally. They genuinely believe they are entitled to win and anything in their way is just a roadblock that comes out of nowhere and is so, you know, against the natural order. Someone who disagreeing with them is some kind of violation of the natural order.
Yes.
Mad. For both men, the focus on academia is unsurprising. Universities are places where culturally liberal views flourish and forceful conservative agendas should take the fight to them. Conservatives believe state power can and should be wielded to prevent professors from indoctrinating students into the left-wing worldview.
Yes.
Which doesn't actually happen. Again, did you know that conservatives believe that the state should stop professors from indoctrinating students? What a mad idea. The right have lost their mind. Again, left-wing outlet. They openly publish this. Like, the right believes we don't have a right to indoctrinate kids. We'll stand on that hill. We'll die on that hill. It'll be nice and easy to die on, frankly.
The framing of this is just unbelievable.
Yeah. I also love the idea that they're like, well, none of this really happens. So actually, universities are a plural place of all viewpoints, which is why you end up with conservative mobs shutting down leftist activities on campus. Name one. Name one time that's happened.
Crickets, again.
No, but seriously, think about it. When? Wait, when has a conservative group actually shut down something on a campus?
I don't think it's ever happened, has it?
My lifetime, I got nothing. No. I mean, literally nothing. There are no mobs of conservative students. Not happening. And all of this is an attempt in normalization. I mean, Bezmenov here. It's a normalization of clown world. And we shall show you an example in Old Blighty here of this normalization taking place. It's another left-wing outlet. The Guardian here decided to go with 4 in 5 people in the UK believe in being woke to race and social justice. Think about that.
Dear God.
And the Guardian writes here with a straight face. An overwhelming majority of people in the UK hold the woke belief that it is important to be alive to the issues of race and social justice. Race justice. 4 in 5 people in this country, 80%, believe in racial justice.
If that's true, it's over, surely.
Yeah, it would be. Which is why I'm calling BS on this. Because for those who may, I don't know, maybe you think, well, what's wrong with that? Think about it. What's justice? Justice is getting what you deserve, right? Okay, you do something wrong, you get what you deserve in response. Jail time, fine, you know, whatever, right? Makes sense. The individual gets his justice. Racial justice? What's that? Well, that's the race getting what it deserves. What the hell does that mean?
Dare we speculate where that could go?
What does the white race deserve, according to the left?
Well, objectively, to hate itself.
To be exterminated, frankly.
To be subordinated. That's quite literally what the critical race theorists believe.
What does the black race deserve? According to the left. What do the Jews deserve, according to the left? I mean, this is seriously what they're asking you to believe in.
You only have to search Sasser Johnson.
Yeah, so the idea that 4 in 5 Britons believe that that's the way to go, and that's how we should organise our society, on racial justice. No way. Absolute BS, in my opinion. But they write here, the findings have been supported by political figures attempting to stop political polarisation. Quote, this research reveals the decent, tolerant and ethical centre ground of the British people, said some Labour MP. We are proud of our history and we care deeply about racial and social justice. Despite talk of polarisation, we will share a meaningful sense of the common good. Again,
that's
this
the new speak.
The normalisation phase of all of this, and we're just like, no, it's perfectly normal and fine, and the whole public agrees in racial justice. Don't you? This is the centre ground. The centre ground is to believe in racial justice. Well,
the most cynical part of this is that you could use this sentence as a way of describing the post-racial agenda like 20, 30 years ago, which was far more, I don't know, amiable than the one we have now. And that the fact that they're doing it like this is so that they can, I don't know, well, I do know, elude people into believing that it's still the same project towards combating racism that it was back in, I don't know, the age of the Prince of Bel-Air, for example. It isn't.
No,
this is a very, very different agenda that we have
now. The Labour MP is saying, if we all sit around and talk about what the Jews deserve, that's the centre ground. What the hell is the extremist ground? So, of course, some cuck conservative turns up to also say that sitting around talking about what the Jews deserve, at least in their own words, is totally normal. So Tory MP and former Treasury Minister decide to go with, what this research highlights is that, as a whole, people across the UK are capable of both comfortable in talking of complex questions of race and identity, and that they still hold firm in a centre ground of tolerance, decency and mutual respect. Clown world is perfectly normal. That's right, I am a conservative. That's genuinely what this guy's contribution to the conversation is. All talking about racial justice, that's perfectly normal. Clown world is normal. It's the centre ground, folks. If we go to the next one, we can see more centre ground situations. The head of Tavistock's clinic cuts ties with parents of trans children over their transphobic views.
Hang on, what?
So the guy in charge of Snip-Snip is cutting off ties with the parents of the children he's dealing with because he's just decided that the parents are transphobes.
Right.
So they don't deserve to be told about what anything's going on.
Yeah.
Last month, the cash review into the NHS Gender and Identity Service, led by one of the country's top paediatricians, found that doctors, quote, feel pressured to adopt an unquestioning approach to their work. Oh, fantastic. Don't question anything. Don't ask questions. That's the centre ground. That's the tolerant, normal ground. in which there is complicity in silence.
I don't want to see what the far left looks like then by that standard.
I mean, I don't know, but I'm interested to find out. If we go to the next one, we see more center ground stuff. We see Apple employees claim that it's racist to phone them to the physical office. Normal center ground things. If we go to the next one, we now have Google's Newspeak, literally in this case, Google Docs criticized for woke inclusive language suggestions. What do they say here? The new feature, officially called assistive writing, I don't need assistance, go to hell, and will be on by default for enterprise users, business customers, who might want to nudge particular writing styles among their staff. Because workers have no rights, certainly no right to not be indoctrinated at work into some foreign ideology. The center ground also somehow requires the reorganization of the entire population's thoughts. Again, self-report there, that it's not the center, if nothing else. Among the words that the system has flagged, it flags mankind, housewife, landlord, and the commuter even flagged a motherboard.
What?
Well, again, back to the original shill I had, which is the scientific language. Kind of motherboard. That represents what mothers are.
Oh, of course.
And that would reveal that there's more things there. There's emotional aspects to life, and not just purely scientific ones. If you go to the next one, we can see Microsoft doing exactly the same thing. What do they go with? They decide to get rid of the term assigned female at birth. There's a little underline that says, do you want to change that to... If you write biologically female, you get a little underline saying you want to change that to assigned female at birth. Ugh. No one assigns you female. No one assigns you male. It's literally impossible. But Microsoft also jumped on with literal newspeak here. They also want to change Postman Pat to Post-Worker Pat.
What?
Comrade Pat. Comrades. And I thought I'd end this off with just a quote from Sam Hyde, the prophet himself. I don't know. But I saw that Gab was responding to this stuff, especially with the Joe Biden clip, if you scroll up there, in which just the fact that they're laughing at us and just don't care. And the quote from Sam Hyde, when we win, we will not forget these people who want you broke, dead, your kids raped and brainwashed, and they'll think it's funny. And if you scroll back up there, I just missed it, just to get how funny they think it is, which is Joe Biden himself sitting there and laughing as you ask him about the fact that he's made the country noticeably worse in every single regard. Clap, clap. Let's go to the video comments.
How's it going, gents? Just wanted to take the chance to plug this, the Giant Gingerbread Gent. It's my own version of the Gingerbread Man written in limerick verse. It's based on a story written by this guy. When he was in kindergarten, he wrote it, and he's since grown up, built his own construction company, and it got wrecked by the lockdowns. So all the profits from this book are going to go and help him rebuild his business. So go and check it out on the website, and it's on the shop.
If I worked in a school, I'd be stocking the shelves with your book. There Take it from me. It sounds great.
Gingerbread Gent. There we are. Australia. That's fund.com rates. Let's go to the next one.
It is the contention of this court that you have consistently and flagrantly, by deed and intent, contravened every covenant in the Female Supremacy Act of 2890.
Objection. Apparently not. Apparently they honestly seem to think that men can get pregnant, like biological men.
Having been found guilty, Roy Chubby Brown is sentenced to be made pregnant, which raises the question of how he will give birth.
Oh, oh my God. My reaction.
Oh, that's the official position of some British universities now.
Which yes, is indeed.
Men are going to give birth. Although they did actually say in the document, if I remember correctly, they wanted them to give birth through a specially constructed penis, which, again, I'm still not even sure the hell that means. It's not their own penis, surely, because it's a specially constructed one.
That can't work.
It's, none of this works.
It can't.
I don't think any of it works, but... Look, I promise you're stupid. I gave it. Let's go to the next one.
So I just had a suggestion for the gold tier Zoom calls, since I really enjoyed listening in, but I've been on 3 calls now, and they have not actually reached me on the speakers list once yet. I understand there's a lot of people and not a lot of time, so I was thinking, what if you did 2 calls that everyone can listen in, but ask that they only speak in one call or the other, not both? That way we can get through more participants without just having to make the call endlessly longer.
I'm not sure that would work for us, though. I was thinking about the same problem as well. I'm not unsympathetic to it. It's really organically made. Like, the rules we have are completely just, well, I think that'll work. So we can change them at any point, obviously. And one of them I was thinking about is, because we do it in order, I don't know if it comes up on people's screens on the chat, but we have a screen, and then like the guy in the top left who has his hand up on our side, we just pick him every time to like just go through them, because then it slides through. Although I was wondering, I'll have to ask Carl, of course, because you know he's the boss, makes all the decisions, whether or not we should start moving to, if we can try and pick people as well, maybe for the first part, because I do notice some people turn up a lot and we've never heard from them, and it's always nice to hear from new people. So. Michael says, if you didn't speak in the last call, you can raise a little brown hand and get special privileges for priority speaking. I don't know. Well, it's something we have to think about. So we'll have a chat. See what we can do. Let's get the next one.
Hello, Lotus Eaters. One thing you should consider is making a contemplations on demographics. Demographics never lies.
That is a very, very big subject.
Well, we have done a few. I don't know what depth Agent Zero wishes. We've done a couple. I know Carl's done his article about it, and we've done a couple of things. But I suppose the hardest thing is the search feature. We'll have to send it to Agent
Zero.
Addressing
the question of demographics entails addressing head on precisely what this, how we are to understand the relationship between race and culture. And depending on which answer you provide, you could end up almost finding like the dark enlightenment utterly impossible to refute, or finding yourself back at the trying to make modernity work, but without knowing how to alleviate the antagonisms that come with cultural disparities. Go on.
Sorry, I was just going to say, because the stuff we did was on the UK, but I'd be interested to do more countries, like to do an episode where we just look at a bunch of different countries and the demographic changes.
Yeah.
Because this conversation is seen as something absurdist in the UK, right? Like it's very taboo, a bit taboo, to mention demographics and the fact that people aren't the same. But when you get into any other part of the world, it becomes a given.
Mm.
Like even from the British perspective, we're like, well, obviously you don't want a load of Russians living in Finnish territory because, well, they might need liberating.
Yes. I mean, the one thing I will say on this particular issue is that we have a very, very bad habit in this country. Whenever like a cultural claim is made, someone accuses the person that raises the point of being racist in making that point about culture, we're not in the habit of actually counteracting that and saying, where's the reference to race? One example being, of course, the Pakistani grooming gangs. Tommy Robinson, for example, has never once alluded to this as a racial issue. He's pointed it out as a cultural issue, combined with, of course, the theological content involved in the Quran as well.
Yeah, well, he has argued it's specifically a religious issue because of the Quran, as you say, but the Pakistanis are just, you know, the largest group that we have are Muslims.
But we haven't. But the very thing that stopped us from addressing this is fear of being called racist, when no one sought to interject and say, "This, where does race fall into this?"
Name the race, I'll write it
exactly.
Down.
Exactly. But yeah.
Well, we redefined race. I don't know if we did a podcast, me and Carl, and he looked at the, I can't remember which group it was. They redefined what racism was in the UK for the government. They redefined it to include any cultural group.
Oh. Yeah, well, that's living convenient, isn't it?
Yeah, but then there's not just the Muslim race. There's the goth race, the gamer race.
It could be literally anything. It's entirely arbitrary, isn't it?
You know, wall-climbing race. Yeah.
But in short, I'd be very, very happy to have a long discussion about demographics. We'll be involved in it.
It's always good.
Yeah.
Let's get the next one.
Admiral Yang does a fairly decent job explaining Thomas's issue with James Lindsay's argumentation. While Marxism does inform the wokest ideology, they don't have any issue with their BLM activists, hoarding all the wealth they've grifted from all of their activism. They simply believe that paler complexioned people shouldn't be allowed to retain or generate wealth in any meaningful manner. This is not something calling them communists will articulate, which is, I believe, what he means by words matter.
Yeah, well, essentially, what they've proven themselves to be is just... sorry, that's put me off. What this matter has proven Black Lives Matter to be is just as if I was still looking at this through a predominantly Marxist lens, they are just another capitalist managerial class in waiting who just have a very different idea of equity. And if you were to look at this in an orthodox Marxist-Leninist sense, you would point to them as vulgar Marxists, and almost worse than the actual enemy, given that they're laying claim to being progressive and to carrying, you know, flying the red flag and actually fetishizing progressive politics en route to actually reaffirming capitalism. That was where the thrust of my anger actually came from, that position. And granted, I'm not a Marxist anymore, but I do think that it's... I still believe this now, that even though the momentum against, you know, pushing back on like groomers, etc., is imperative, and even if you have to call them Marxists to actually point it out, then okay, fine. But doing this in the long run is going to be hurtful, because there's actually a very powerful Marxist argument against what the progressives are doing at the moment. If you can prove that the self-posited Marxists are acting in the most un-Marxist way possible, you actually expose what they're actually trying to achieve. You dress down the language that they're hiding behind, and you see their ideas as completely naked. That provides you with everything that you need to push back on to prove why they are complete charlatans, and from that, present a positive political counter-solution.
This comes off as such left-wing cope, though, where it's just like, well, they're not sincere in their beliefs because they've ended up millionaires who sit around enjoying their wealth. It's just like, well, every Communist Party group ever ends up sitting around enjoying their wealth.
It does look like that, yeah. Fidel Castro being one. Well, communist China currently being another. It puts in practice, it always does seem to end up looking more like a kleptocracy or another form of feudalism, as opposed to of course spreading the resources among all for the benefit of all. It's not something that I think should ever be tried again, not least because it's based on a completely false projection of how humans ultimately are and a false understanding of how history moves.
Well, like a Heidelin, when he basically just refers to it as like a bug ideology. Yeah, but it's not for humans.
But as a method of social critique for our current purposes, I think it's very important to know what critical theory is, first and foremost, and where its conflations with orthodox Marxism actually are.
Let's get the next one.
Yeah.
So now that the Lotus Eaters have been going on for about a year, has anyone begun cataloging their best out-of-context quotes? I always feel that Thomas produces quite a lot of them, all things considered. He is light in appearances, but heavy in impact.
I think Based Ape has some kind of folder with all of our worst moments on, and I presume we'll be blackmailing us within a year. So.
I look forward to that.
Go to the next one.
Hey, Lotus Eaters. My brother and I, we are actually participating in a convoy in Terrace, BC. And yeah, it's a beautiful day out to go and let the world know that we want our freedom.
It was very fun doing a loop of our city, honking our horn, and mostly positive responses. There was only one person giving us the middle finger while screaming at us. And we actually got to meet one of the truckers who was part of the Ottawa convoy, and he told us some stories. It was super cool.
Oh, cool.
Keep us informed.
Yeah, sounds great.
The account that used to post stuff about the US convoy trucks seems to have gone dark, so I don't know what's going on.
That's weird.
So, yeah, next one.
Hello, guys. So I noticed that Top Gear has been mentioned a lot within the last couple of weeks, and I think, as somebody who's been watching that show pretty religiously from an early age, that show is actually responsible for a lot of base people from my generation, because a lot of people seen it, and it was always very pro-British. Jeremy Clarkson, I think, is the best thing that UK actually produced within the last 50 years. Sorry, Carl. And it was never above a stereotypical joke. It always loved other cultures, but it loved its own the most. It was very against global warming, and generally speaking, it was always on left's bad side.
Yeah, it's because the lads who did it were very localized in their worldview, and also they didn't really care about anyone else except where they live. They were very North FC about it. And you can see that's why they fit so well on the Sigma male grind set memes and everything else.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, they're the best moment. I don't know why I think this is the best one, but just the way you've seen when they start talking about Mexicans.
Yeah.
And they just, they're joking about Mexicans. And then just the point at which Hamster turns around and goes, God, imagine waking up and knowing you're Mexican. And they all just burst out laughing. And then he just goes, oh, don't worry, we won't get any complaints because the Mexican ambassador will be sat watching the TV go.
I think Richard Hammond might still be banned from Mexico to this day.
It's worth it. It's such high quality bans. It's unbelievably gold.
Hello, Lord Cedars. Tonight, The first proper episode of my podcast, All Around the Campfire, is going live 9 p.m. sharp. It's all about talking about different definitions of political terms. Nothing that anyone here probably needs to watch, but you might find it entertaining all the same. Here's a, like, what you can expect from it. Anecdote. Partisan.
The Overton Window. Social democracy.
Trickle-down economics. Postmodern. Warhammer model. Metal Gear Rising posting.
Shilling.
ADD medication.
I do enjoy myself in touch. Let's go to the next one.
Tony Dean and Little Joan with another Legend of the Pines, the Underground Railroad and Harriet Tubman. The Underground Railroad in South Jersey had 17 stops, houses and a church, churches and even a pharmacy. The Harriet Tubman Museum is in Cape May. She lived there in the 1850s. I checked all the houses, however, and not a single one has a ghost. Even in the afterlife, white supremacy.
at least there's one way to make sure your roads aren't haunted, I guess.
Yeah.
Indeed. Anyway. Also, is little Jonah okay? Should we sleep in now? But we'll find out. Anyway, thanks for that, Tony. Let's go to the written comments. So on the mother supremacist, Chris Wolf says, I don't think there is a clearer message that you despise life than attacking motherhood. It is literally a human embodiment of life and nature. Of course, the left is rebelling. Omar Awad says, leftists have the weirdest impression that if they only label something as alt-right white supremacist, that people will stop choosing to do or be that thing. Yeah, imagine trying to do that with motherhood. You know it's alt-right. Have kids. Okay.
It's not going to wash.
If you call something as fundamental as motherhood a Nazi ideology, you're more likely to increase the number of people who identify as Nazis rather than decrease the number of mothers.
Agreed.
Yeah. I mean, if you say, well, only Nazis have babies, you'd be like, all right, well, I guess I'll get reading. this book, not actually, Mein Kampf is a terrible book. But there's people, we should probably, I kind of want to do a book club on it. Like, I don't think we can. But just because it's crap. Like, I was surprised. I'd never read it. And then I read about halfway through. And I was just like, this is terrible.
How many pages long is it? It's quite long, isn't it?
300 something, maybe. But it's just the fact that it's so poorly written. Like, I'm surprised that it wasn't more mocked at the time. Because you could release a crap book in, say, 1000 BC. Sorry, 1000 AD. Because, you know, hardly anyone can read. But in 1930s Germany, I would have thought more people would be able to read and be like, well, this is boring. Or this, like, it just jumps from subject to subject with no real connection whatsoever. It's crap. Anyway, Student of History says, oh no, mothers are being extreme and shuffles deck, protect the children. Yeah.
Yeah, such fascists.
Yeah. Chris Wolf says, it's annoying listening to pink-haired stick figures talk as if they are soldiers. They keep using language like mobilization and allies. It's incredibly cringe and makes me keep a watchful eye on their ability to control their emotions. Callum Dayton says, this article on women by MSNBC has got more plot holes than Swiss cheese shot up by an American firing range.
Yep, just a bit.
Joseph Smith in the chat. The difference is that the far left are the only ones cowardly enough to hide behind their women. The right-wing men at least have the huts to stand in front of themselves. I assume it's guts, it's meant to be. That does seem true. I mean, especially when you actually look at Antifa cells, like they take their girlfriends with them and then like shove their girlfriends into the fore against this ex-Marine who's joined the border force. And he just stood there with his gun. Like, go home. Just go home. So, Omar Awad says, they're coming for your children and God help them because the mums are starting to notice. If you think the alt-right is scary, wait until you meet up with the mama bears and tiger moms. George Happ says, politicians successfully managed to kick out fathers from their homes and families, so mothers are next on the chopping block. If we have any chance to resist the current progressive dystopia, it's via the family unit.
I agree. And it is reassuring that since the intersectional agenda has doubled down and become more shameless in its aspirations, the family, particularly in America, has stood strong in those important areas.
It's interesting how the family unit has survived in the concentration camps of North Korea better than in the United States.
Yeah.
I mean, you think, like, both left-wing groups obviously try and destroy the family. And in North Korea, it's because of the trust. Like, you don't want to trust anyone else but the regime, right? But the ability to separate men off from their families and to end up with such high levels of single motherhoods in the West, I mean, like, that's just not achieved in actual communist states, which actively try and destroy the family unit, especially when it's in a camp. the amazingness of American leftists, I suppose.
I think it's fair to say that it does qualify as an ahistorical feature of humankind at this point.
I suppose I'll read one more and then we'll move on to the Meghan Markle. So Israeli Crusader. Oy vey. Dadism is base, but Mother Supremacy is even baster. Certainly base. Is. Let's go to Meghan Markle.
Yes, so Karen Dayton says, I can't remember what was the last thing I watched on Netflix before I dropped off the site. Last time I looked on there, all I saw was stuff I'd previously watched that I could see on other sites for free and intersectional garbage. The only subscription thing I am interested in this year is Clarkson's Farm Season 2. Yeah, that's if no one has seen it, it's on Amazon Prime. I implore you to watch it however you can. It's not only factual in many things, but it's also great fun and entertaining to watch. That is an excellent suggestion, and I have had the pleasure of seeing Clarkson's Farm Season 1. It's amazing. It's got everything that that kind of the Grand Tour has, except for, of course, the banter amongst the three, which constitutes, of course, an incredible part of the appeal to it. But Clarkson is just hilarious. What he's done in Clarkson's Farm, though, is actually a huge favour for the Farmers Union. As in his partnership with Netflix on this matter has actually got more achieved politically than anything I think the National Union of Farmers has done on its own. So it almost is that true?
No, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah, but no,
we read an article about it ages ago.
Yeah,
which they were just like, well, we had Country Life or whatever, and that did nothing compared to what he's done.
Yeah, but it's incredible. And to be perfectly honest, it might be Amazon's best ever contribution. Genuinely. Anthony S. says, I cancelled Netflix because of the cutie scandal. Yeah, good call. Realised I didn't need it. I need a lot of people. I mean, a lot of people just have it because it's so inexpensive. Yes, and well, of course, it's very, very easy to use other people's accounts as well. Esh Silver says, so not only is Netflix getting worse in its original programming, but they keep jacking up prices and are eventually going to crack down on account sharing. Yeah. It's a wonder why they have any subscribers left. That old show catalogue must be really powerful. Angel Brain says, if I just scroll down ever so slightly, on Netflix, Thomas said, it's getting progressively worse. Cracking accidental pun there, sir. Yes, indeed. That was intentional. It wasn't really. Boring Peter says, Netflix was planning to adopt Dials the Twit. Thank God that fell through. Student of Hitler. I was about to say Student of Hitler. Bloody hell. Student of
History.
History says, her dreams are dying. Maybe she can bottle her tears and sell it to the Brits. The sad thing is, I can see her trying something like that, depending on how low she's willing to go to try to salvage anything about her. Well,
she's going to release a sex tape, isn't she?
Yeah, probably with Pink Medusa. Last comment from that base chick. Meghan Markle is the poster girl for everything a woman should not be in the workplace. Based. Absolutely right. She acts like an entitled harpy, and the negative reactions to this are, according to her, because of racism or sexism and not because she's a terrible person. Most of my life has been spent hanging out and working with dudes, and the thing I found is that they are more than happy to help a chick as long as the chick isn't trying to use her feminine wiles to manipulate them into doing everything for her. Who knew guys would generally treat women equally, assuming the women aren't constantly shoving the fact that they are women in men's faces? Oh, wait.
Yeah, I realise that. It's just whenever she says it's racist, I'm like, what? Mm. Like, imagine her looking at you and telling you that she's black. She's not.
No.
I mean, like, in no human conception would you say that's a black woman. I mean, we joked about her being Spanish before because the Spanish aren't white either, but we should really do a segment where we just ask, what is a black person? Because I don't know if you've seen as well, there's the first black MP for Liverpool. And then there's the first black mayor for Liverpool as well. And it's just... Right, if I sent either of those people to Spain, they would tan easily. So the idea that these people are claiming this heritage, like, I think we actually do need to get out the world map and start drawing off where people can actually say they're black anymore, because the American blacks certainly don't seem to be real if we're not doing that.
No, it's pretty absurd.
Anyway, on the ruling elites, who just do not give a toss, Freeball2112 says they obviously recharged his battery to full power for that performance. He's still bugging it up. Well, he managed to clap. I don't know. Is that a performance now? Rick Archer says, I still maintain the current regime is just Obama's third term. Certainly looks like it. Ben van der Plants says the right wants to stop leftist professors indoctrinating students, which doesn't happen. Why are you so mad about it then? Not like it will change anything, right? Nah, certainly will. Student of History, not the other thing. They persist with don't say gay, because if they described it honestly but still opposed it, they'd lose a lot of support very quickly.
Mm.
I don't even know. Among their own people, they probably supported that crap. Post-worker Pat doesn't work well in the context of that song. I can't even remember the damn song now. Post-worker Pat, and it's black. Yeah, it doesn't work.
No.
I don't think they were taking it into account. Though, free will. So I guess the Tories have brought into the statistics as well, as if they needed saying again, the Tories are a lost cause. Much of them certainly are. Mm. Much of them seem to become MPs because they want a quiet life. Just think about that statement.
Yeah.
I got into politics to have a quiet life. What are you doing? What the hell is wrong with you?
Mm. Also go to work in finance later on, like David Cameron or George Osborne as a spokesperson anyway.
A pension scheme, isn't it? The third job.
Yeah.
Nothing sinister about spellchecker nudging you to use politically correct language? Certainly not.
You know, Google still doesn't recognise, for all its woke virtues, intersectionalism as a word.
There's no way that's true, surely.
I've typed it many times.
They don't have it.
It keeps correcting me.
They have intersectionality, but intersectionalism, it still comes up with a Wikipedia entry instead of a word definition.
It refuses to accept that intersectionality is an ism.
No, they've got intersectionality, but they haven't got intersectionalism by the looks of it. Interesting. Probably just needs an update. Yes. Ira Ward says, I'm not sure Biden is cognizant enough to realize he's the butt of the joke. The rest of them, however, putting a vegetable in charge and mocking Americans as they tear the country down around them seems very on brand for the elite class. Mm-hmm. Same feeling when Bezos buys Lord of the Rings to ruin it and laugh at the outcry from the fans.
Netflix's competition.
That's a downer to put on. Like, Omar, you're making a very good point, but it's not a point I wanted to know. Anyway.
It's going to be such a flop.
We're out of time. Otherwise, if you want more from us, go over to lotuseaters.com. Check out the content I mentioned. Otherwise, we'll be back tomorrow, 1 o'clock. Thank you and goodbye.